From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Alana asks Joey about the culture around sports versus celebrity, and Joey asks Alana about the potential for climate change moonshots.
This week we have a special guest host, Alana Bundell, because sometimes we won't be here, and so we're going to bring in lots of different folks from Sylvain Labs to participate in this. Aaron's gallivanting because he likes gallivanting. So this is what a Joey sounds like.
And this is what an Alana sounds like.
And this is what Bigfoot Hunter executive producer Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
Are we approving of Bigfoot Hunter?
Sure,
we'll run with it.
Okay. Here's my shtick.
Your shtick.
Yeah, this is the background on my question.
I got the schmear.
The schmear. All right. So this is coming from, obviously, a place of personal bias. As a lifelong non-athlete, as someone with an involuntary encyclopedic knowledge of celebrity and Hollywood gossip and information.
I like the idea that it's just appearing somehow in your head.
It is. Yeah. I don't even know where it comes from. Yeah. It just kind of... So I've thought a lot, naturally, over the years about the difference in perception and attitude around celebrity knowledge and information and fandom specifically versus that of sports. And I've noticed, you know, in recently a certain kind of shame that I feel around celebrity culture and just kind of pushing myself to interrogate that a bit. And I've noticed that I even sort of perform this like voice when I'm talking about celebrity stuff to kind of signal to other people that I'm in on the joke and I don't take it that seriously. But I do know a lot about Hollywood and I do know all about the marriages and the breakups and the babies, and it's fun, but I don't understand why that's embarrassing and why I kind of feel shameful about it and why I need to signal that it's a joke when I hear people in the office and my boyfriend and in life talking about sports. And to me, it's a similar amount of insane knowledge that has nothing to do with your life. Your head is crammed full of these statistics and information about people that don't really mean anything to you.
Yeah.
And I find them very similar, but the attitudes around the cultures are very different. So my question is, why does sports culture get to be heroicized while celebrity culture is derided?
I have a lot of questions back at you. I don't know if I have an immediate answer. I think there's sort of, you know, there's definitely a gender dynamic at play, right? That's sort of my first response. Because I was going in my head as you were talking about this, like, how long has sports culture existed and how long has celebrity culture existed? And is it that it's like celebrity culture is a novel thing? And I don't think it is, right? Like, socialites were always a thing. It was just not necessarily like mass. It was more locally oriented. But, you know, like gladiators and things like that, like there's been sports culture for a long time and it's always been men. And it feels like there's probably some patriarchy dynamic involved.
I'm glad you bring that up first.
That you're glad that was... Let's start with gender.
Yeah.
And like get to the light stuff.
Yeah.
There is a ton of similarity. The question I guess I have is, you know, I don't know that people deride all celebrity culture necessarily. But there is a certain aspect of modern celebrity culture that feels new and different and less based on something, some skill, right? Like sports is based on the ability to like do something that the average person can't do. Whereas, and you know, acting on Hollywood culture is about like, I can do this thing, or I'm more beautiful or handsome than anyone, or I have this skill that other people don't have. But there's a certain subset of reality TV that feels like it's celebrity for the sake of celebrity as someone who doesn't consume it necessarily.
I am so sick of people asking, why is Kim Kardashian famous for nothing?
Yeah.
They are such hustlers. And to me, and I know it's not the same thing, but to me, I look at her and everything they've built, and it is somewhat similarly mystical to me as whatever people feel, I think, whatever
people feel. A slam dunk sport
yeah.
basket.
Those things, touchdowns and all that stuff. To me, it's just a different kind of, and I don't mean hero in the sense of being, you know, a role model icon per se, but just in having achieved something that feels so far away from my reality, it doesn't seem that dissimilar to me than looking at an athlete doing stuff that feels amazing.
Yeah. I guess the question I have is sort of, you know, what are you mirroring? You know, like what would someone, in this case where you're saying, you know, Kim Kardashian or the Kardashians writ large are doing something that you don't do. When I look at it from the outside, all I'm thinking is that they're doing something you don't do by like being on TV and having a lot of money.
So your question is?
My question is sort of, what in these cases are they doing that is sort of worthy of following or worthy of being appealing or enticing or something? Because to me, right, like again, like I'm outside of this and I don't really have any derision for it, but I also don't get it. You know, like I don't sort of understand where the appeal comes from. As an outsider, it's sort of like they're attractive people and that's appealing, or they're dramatic maybe and that's appealing.
Well, first of all, the Kardashian empire is very much a certain subset of a larger Hollywood culture. So I don't want to go too far down this KKKKK rabbit hole. But I think what's interesting about it is similar to how now it's sort of a known thing that Lady Gaga, long ago as like an NYU student or whatever, sort of charted her path to fame and very intentionally knew kind of what she wanted to be and, you know, is shape-shifting every step of the way and all of this stuff. To me, it's fascinating because Kim Kardashian wanted to be famous and she achieved it so spectacularly and upholds it through so many different things that I don't think people even realize the amount of businesses that that family is responsible for. I don't know how Kris Jenner's head doesn't pop off every day.
Yeah,
they're doing so much. And my point is not, oh my God, I wish I was that or whatever, but I think it's just fascinating to watch someone achieve something. It's kind of, to me, like a new American dream.
Yeah. There is a conversation about values that I think is sort of baked into this as well, right? Sports sort of becomes a metaphor, and you see it specifically from league to league of like who are the more avid fans and what is sort of their political bent or their values bent or whatever it is. But sports becomes sort of a metaphor of like, it's about hard work, it's about determination, it's about grit, whatever. And they're sort of like, it's about teamwork and collaboration. It's all of these things. So there's so many values baked into it, for better or for worse. You know, I don't really have an opinion on that necessarily. But in this particular case, I think there is and I'm only thinking about the Kardashians actually, so I don't know if this is making the point, but in the Kardashians case, there feels like a certain amount of vacuousness. I mean, clearly they have to be intelligent people to run all of these things and make all this money and stay in the light, but it seems like celebrity for the sake of celebrity. Now, in the case of like Hollywood culture, I feel like that's different. And I think that sports is merging with celebrity culture in general, right? Like, especially the NBA, the athletes are constantly working on their celebrity. I think they've learned from, I mean, literally the Kardashians are dating like half the league. So they're learning from the Kardashians how to manage your brand and build an empire and diversify and do all of these things. And it is like, there's a certain part of following the NBA that is just following celebrity. It's not actually different.
Right. And so my question is, and maybe there's not an answer to this, but why is there no shame around it? I mean, sorry to blow up your spot, but my boyfriend has a text thread with his friends and it's called like Knicks Boys. And they fucking chat all day about sports news and go nuts with each other. And I just look at this and I'm like, how is this not any more silly than being excited that a celebrity is pregnant or something? This shit has nothing to do with your real everyday life. And people go nuts for the information, the knowledge, and the kind of like nitty gritty fan culture around it. I don't understand that.
Well, I think fandom in general is somewhat shameful, right? Like there is an obsessive aspect to fandom that is not that you should be ashamed, but I think people in general, like when you hit a certain level of being obsessed with something, start to feel bad about it. You're like, you know, all of my Taylor Swift posters that are up in my bedroom are, I'm embarrassed of, but I love them. But I think with sports, what's interesting about it, and maybe is sort of part of why people don't feel shame, is because sport consumption is so social. Live events are so social. You're building like a team around it, right? Like you follow a team, and some celebrity stuff has gotten to that point, right? Like the Bayhive and Tay Tay and Barbies and whatever.
The Barbs. No, I think that's a great point. And that's exactly why my friends and I want to start a bar that only shows reality TV. There's a craving for that community. And how fun would that be?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great point.
There's the tribalism aspect of sports where you're like, because it's social and you know that someone else is saying that they love a thing as much as you do and they're externally signaling it. That might be why there's not shame. Like you're literally like internalizing it as a pride point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So it's about also the worthiness of athletes. If people are going to be kind of poking at the Kardashians or whoever it is and kind of questioning their worth. I read this thing that this boxing champion, Mr.
You're talking about sports like an old pro. This puncher guy,
Mr. Canelo Alvarez, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Signed a $365 million deal that will make him the richest athlete in the history of sports.
I don't know about this deal, but that's crazy. There's also
WTF.
It may be the biggest deal. I don't think it'll make him the richest athlete in the history of sports. It may be like the singularly biggest deal, but you know, you have
How much was LeBron's Lakers deal?
LeBron's Lakers deal was almost $200 million, but that was a five-year contract. He's already, you know, in year 15. So, and he has like all of his endorsement deals. He has a lifetime contract with Nike. You know, Jordan owns the Bobcats. So there's a lot of people that have made money. What's the other boxer that is terrible and a wife beater, but also the best boxer of in the middleweight class I can't think of his name.
Is it Mike Tyson?
Mike Tyson is great, but it's not Mike Tyson.
Separate guy. Sorry, yeah. Mike.
I know boxers. But I think like it is crazy that they're making like Canelo Alvarez is making that much money.
Yeah. And you also just touched on, I don't want to keep devolving us, but another thing that to me is problematic with sports, which is the insane incidents of domestic violence.
Yeah.
Totally. And aggression and,
you know, that, toxic masculinity, right?
Exactly.
Like that sort of a thing.
And I feel like that doesn't get really talked about in the fandom at all. Like, shouldn't that be a marker for shame?
I mean, it gets talked about in a way that's similar to this conversation right now with one of those old evangelical preachers down south being like, we can't say anything bad about this Khashoggi murder in Saudi Arabia because we don't want to kill our arms deal. It's like, you're a preacher. You're supposed to be like leading your flock or whatever it is that preachers do. And you know, you're not doing that. This is sort of the same thing where like people make apologies for their team because they're so tribally involved in whatever their team is. They're like, you know, Ray Rice punched his wife, but we're in Super Bowl contention. So maybe it's okay if he apologized, which is not okay. But I think people make apologies as part of the tribalism aspect of it, which is problematic.
I think my concluding point on this is sports culture and fandom may be a little bit more problematic than we like to acknowledge, and celebrity culture might have a bit more value than we like to acknowledge. Looking at things like Taylor Swift going to get people to vote and all this stuff, like, let's give it a rest. We all need our comfort sources.
I like that your conclusion was what your conclusion coming in was.
I don't want to apologize for it.
You don't. You shouldn't apologize.
I said my piece.
I think celebrity culture is evolving and will continue to evolve, and hopefully gets better.
I look forward to it.
I'll be watching. And we're back from break that was 6 seconds, but in that time, we did the Kylie Jenner challenge and our lips look incredible. So here's my question. Are you ready? You're already rolling your eyes before I even asked.
I'm not rolling my eyes. Carry on.
I've been thinking a lot about moonshots. I don't know, maybe for the past year. Like, as the specter of climate change has risen and increased and you know, ever since the Paris Climate Accord, the United States rolled out of it, I've been thinking about, is there an alternative way to come in and solve for this? And moonshots was always sort of this idea, right? You know, we went to the moon because we committed to do it and everyone got on board and we just started gunning and doing science and Bunsen burners and until we were on the moon. My question now is, if the government's not gonna help us solve for climate change, who's gonna do the moonshot?
First, I wonder if you need to explain a little more what you mean colloquially by moonshot.
I mean, moonshot literally comes from the idea of we wanted to get to the moon. And so we committed, and, you know, within 10 years of JFK's speech, we were on the moon. And I'm thinking about this a lot because of, you know, in conjunction with all of this happening, we're getting increased tax cuts for the wealthy and businesses are piling up crazy amounts of money. I mean, both businesses themselves as well as the owners are accumulating this incredible amount of wealth. And I'm wondering what their responsibility is. I printed out a graph that I shared with you. The top 17 companies with the largest amount of, in quotes, cash on hand, meaning they just have liquid capital that they could move around, have $800 billion. The moonshot to go to the moon in the 10 years from when that speech was given till we made it, there was $25 billion spent. With inflation, that's $100 billion. We could do, these companies could collectively shoot 8 moonshots.
Okay, so first of all, I want everyone to know that when I found out I was doing the podcast, I sent Joey a list of topics that I felt like I could talk comfortably on. And it included, you know, Real Housewives, restaurant culture, aspect of the female experience. And then he comes back with like, yeah, so
solve climate change.
Silicon Valley solve climate change, but it's fine. I do have thoughts on it. I think that I actually went through, I feel like, a phase in my life where I almost expected something like this to happen. And I was really comforted by the power that companies like Google and Apple and Facebook were accruing, and that it felt really nice to know that these progressive, idealistic, brilliant, innovation-forward companies were rising to such prominence and had so much money and power, because it's like, yes, they're going to save the world. And I can't pinpoint the exact moment of disillusionment, but it feels like there have been so many scandals recently. And again, it's hard to know living in real time through this like media explosion that we're going to, if things are actually happening more or whether we're just aware of it more. So I'm not sure on that, but it does seem like shit has sort of been hitting the fan with pretty much every major Silicon Valley company. So there has been an interesting emotional turnaround in terms of acknowledging how fallible everyone is and like expecting Tesla to do something, you know, like this. And then, oh, Elon Musk is having a total meltdown. So that, I think, is an interesting part of this, too, that we might hope to look to them to save us. But then also being reminded of the very fallible humans, mostly men, at the center of these companies. So that complicates my feelings on it a little bit. But
I mean, the thing is, I mean, I totally agree. There is, you know, you're left in this position of you can't expect anyone to do anything, right? Like, you can only do what you can do. But the issue when it comes to something like trying to solve for climate change is that it has to be a collective thing, right? Like, you or I are not going to individually solve for this. And so you turn to these companies that sort of put out, you know, the top three on this list are Apple, Microsoft, and Alphabet, being Google's parent company. Apple has $261 billion on hand. That's more than enough to buy out like all of the American automakers today in cash. Microsoft has $133 billion in cash, and Alphabet has 94.7. Between the three of them, you can see this graph at thisisnonsense.com, so you know what I'm talking about. But between the three of them, that's almost $500 billion, right? You could say just the three of them, not even anyone else having to get involved, we're going to come up with alternative energy solutions. They're into so many other things, right? Like, all of these companies have like autonomous vehicle programs. They're like looking to like mine resources from asteroids and crazy stuff like that. Like, there's a legitimate problem on the horizon.
And they're trying to solve death.
Yeah, they're trying to solve death, but we're all going to die anyway, so
if you Google can Silicon Valley, one of the first things that comes up is make death defunct.
Death defunct?
Yeah.
That might just be based on your search results.
That's true.
They know how much you're on WebMD, and so they've decided she's worried about death. We'll just give this one to her.
That's probably true. Yeah, I mean, so what do you think is stopping it? Is it ego? Is it profit hunger? Like, why isn't it happening?
I think it's probably like both or all of those things, right? Like, Jeff Bezos individually is worth more than Microsoft has cash on hand. Individually, Jeff Bezos is worth $140 billion or something, right? Like, he was worth $67 billion in his wealth doubled last year or this year. Now that's obviously like stock and properties and whatever else, but you know, he could essentially individually fund one of the NASA moonshots to go to space. Like, but instead he's worried about like working out so he looks good, despite you're not going to turn that corner, Jeff. But then he's also like having fights with Elon Musk, to your point about ego. And they're like having like a space race between the two of them just to see like whose rocket's bigger.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a metaphor.
But pause. I mean, that's not exactly how opportunity cost works, right? It's not like Jeff Bezos could take all of his net worth and suddenly turn it into solving climate change.
I mean, you have someone like Bill Gates gave away half of his wealth to charity, which is totally a commendable thing, and I think it's great, and the Gates Foundation is doing incredible things. My bigger question is, there's clearly this sort of issue where we're on the precipice of something bad, and there needs to be concerted focus somehow. And how do you get and maybe the answer is like our government should be doing it, and we should collectively find a way to solve this as a country and not these companies. But my bigger push is, in a country like ours where we're so oriented towards free market capitalism, there's money to be made in solving for climate change. Like, there is an opportunity here to do something. And if these companies did it together and they owned all the IP and they funnel it in or whatever, like, there's a million ways you could do this. But, you know, there aren't many places outside of governments that have the amount of wealth. I mean, if you go to China, Tencent and some Alibaba, like places like that also have the strength and capability to do something. But
I mean, my strong hope, despite all their imperfections and ego issues and all that, is that it is going to take a few brilliant minds to sort of, I mean, it will obviously be a mass effort, but to kind of spearhead putting the pedal to the metal or whatever, to get this done, because I really do question whether us on the ground as everyday society people can wrap our heads around it. And I think that that's a big part of the problem. And that's why it will take turning to these kinds of, what I said before, these sort of progressive, innovative, cash rich companies. I do still think that it will ultimately be on them to help this. And you know, even me as someone who is not a climate change denier, you know, I'm very aware of the issues, but I still feel powerless really about what to do, or maybe it's just ignorant. But I went to a talk last week where they were talking about the importance of putting things in kind of everyday terms to make it more tangible and real. And one of the things that this chef was talking about was that she went to a class at Berkeley where they a scientist was saying that in Napa, the temperatures are rising so much that in 30 years, the vineyards will only be able to sell raisins. There is going to be no such thing for our children or grandchildren as Napa Valley wine or California wine. And putting it in terms like that, as kind of frivolous as that is compared to, you know, us all dying.
Yeah.
tries to make it more real, but even upon trying to process that, I still don't really know what I should do. So I hope that someone like Apple or Google will be able to have that kind of, I don't know if it's broader system thinking or whatever it is, to figure out how all the pieces work together, because I, as one person, still don't really know what to do.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the point, is like, it's such a big thing that sometimes when it's that big, you just have to throw money at it, literally, and just be like, hire these really smart people and build these really smart facilities and test this out and experiment with this, right? Like, when they were doing the moonshot, obviously it was a concerted effort, but they pulled all the smartest people together and said, how do we get to the moon, and started trying to figure that out. I think we're at the point now where someone has to do that. You have other examples where we've done this for terrible ends, right? Like the Manhattan Project as an example, where we were able to come up with a nuclear weapon in a really short window by literally just pulling all the smartest people in the world together into a room. And, you know, like Einstein and Oppenheimer. Is that right? Yeah. Good old Afi, pulling them together. And so the question, you know, who has the ability to do that now? Historically, governments have had the ability to do that. But, you know, you have these companies now that could do it themselves.
It's interesting that this conversation has started sort of in this space of the top-down approach, because climate change feels like such a big issue. But I was just listening to The Daily this morning where they were talking about climate change and a bottom-up sort of way to do it from a Yale economist who basically said, if we implement a carbon tax, he won the Nobel Prize for this recommendation, basically, where he's like, if we put a price on carbon, it would solve the problem that the, you know, this latest climate change report has put out. Like, that is almost the only way that he presented to tackle the problem. So what if it weren't sort of the onus of just one individual company or one individual person with a lot of wealth? What if it were just everybody has to
buckle up and start paying for their pollution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in South Africa this summer and Cape Town was approaching day zero on running out of water. And the way that they were able to kind of solve that for the time being is doing these kind of austerity measures. And it's, you know, it feels dystopian almost. It's hard to think about turning to that as the best solution, but it works. You know, when you say to people, if you take more than a 2-minute shower or whatever, you're going to literally pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, or you've flushed the toilet too much or whatever, but that's what it took. And that's how they were able to push it back.
Yeah. I think there is sort of, I have a bias because we're an innovation company towards creation, right? Like, what are you going to create to solve the problem? And I think, you know, your point about top down versus bottom up, what's interesting in the carbon tax example is that it's a top down solution that forces bottom up change. So it's implementing both. I think that the carbon tax is a band-aid. It's a time extension on the clock, but it's not a resolution for solving our demand for carbon in the long term, right? Like, people are not going to stop using their computers, or, you know, there's not going to be a decreasing demand for energy as society becomes more complex. And so I think the carbon tax is like we should implement it tomorrow, but it's not a solution that will solve everything. It is a solution that puts all of our hands into the fire, our butts to the fire. Something's on fire.
I just want to say one last thing, because to fulfill my promise that all roads lead to celebrity and Kim Kardashian, I do think that there's a greater trend we can notice that in the face of failing sort of decrepit systems like big government, we do see individuals and celebrities and prominent figures stepping up to do what used to be the work of widespread organizations or governments. I mean, mm-hmm. It's crazy. Bethany Frankel, originally from Real Housewives of New York fame, but also now a major entrepreneur and whatever else.
I was trying to think of Real Housewives of New York.
Roni,
got it.
Yeah. Bethany Frankel of Roni fame started this foundation called Be Strong, and she is now the go-to presence in the wake of climate change disasters.
Mm.
She was, when FEMA wasn't doing it, when Red Cross was struggling to get there, she was in Texas. She spent millions on Puerto Rico. She was just in Florida for the hurricane there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating to think about people using their wealth and power as celebrity and prominent figures to kind of step in to do these things that government can. And I think that we're going to only keep seeing more of it.
Yeah, I think that is amazing. I hope we solve some problems, and if it takes celebrities doing it, I'm on board. I'll start watching Roni.
Thank you.
And I'll come to your bar.
Great to see you there.
Critical Nonsense is a Sylving Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in blustery New York, New York.
We'd like to thank executive producer and Loch Ness Monster Hunter, Jess Vander.
Why is she such a monster hunter today?
I don't know. It just feels right.
And we'd also like to thank sound engineer Alex Contell.
We'd like to thank picture magician, designer Nora Mestrich.
And we would also like to thank our amazing production helpers, including Sara Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Wong.
We'd like to thank Alain Sylvain for letting us use his name. We'd also like to give some special thanks today. I'd like to thank Kylie Jenner for how good my lips look right now.
And I would like to thank Stormy for being such a good baby. Do you know who Stormy is?
No.
It's Kylie Jenner's baby.
I'd like to thank Bethany Frankel because it's given new meaning to Rice Aroni for me.
What?
Roni.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I'm done.
That's all the thanks we have because we're just so grateful to Kylie Jenner.
I didn't want this to be about Kylie. She's the worst of them all.